This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We are now in the month of October. I love the smell out here. It's always smelling like it's about to get really cold, even though it never happens. But, you know, the anticipation makes you feel like the fall and the autumn is here. I'm sure my co-host missed that. He grew up in Louisiana, along with me. We didn't grow up together. It was just sort of a happenstance deal. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by a fellow Louisianian, I think, Adam Murray.
Louisiana, little New England.
Like, when someone comes up to you, because you live in New Hampshire now, so when you come up, what do you say? You say, I'm a Louisianian?
No, I just say nothing and quietly shirk away. I'm from New Hampshire. I'm in New Hampshire. Ooh, I came here from South Dakota. Ooh, I'm originally from Rhode Island. None of these places are impressive.
When does it start to get that hint of cold weather up there?
We are already in the cold weather. I believe it was 40 degrees this morning.
Oh, so you're already there. So the month of October obviously doesn't really give you anything new, whereas in... I've always felt like Halloween, like I haven't gone trick-or-treat. I used to never go trick-or-treating, you know, as a teenager in my 20s, because I'm an actual grown-up person. But, not to try to make fun of people who trick-or-treat, but it is kind of lame if you do it by yourself. But my daughter, obviously, goes out now trick-or-treating, and I always feel like Halloween is like the day where the cold front breaks, where you start to get that consistently cold weather in like the 50s, and then it starts to get down into the 40s, or maybe even luckily the 30s and Thanksgiving, because I love the cold weather personally. Some people, like, they run away like they're the Wicked Witch, you know.
Yes, the cold weather that you are used to, like the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, like, man, it's 55. I gotta put on a long sleeve shirt. It's so cold here.
Oh, man. I love the cold weather so much that it would be 40 degrees in December down here in Louisiana.
That is not...
I'd be wearing shorts.
That is not... Okay. No, I'm not going to even... 30 degrees is like 30 degrees warmer than it is here in the winter. We hit steady zeros.
Oh, give me those zeros.
You don't know zeros. When I was in Finland for my wedding, it was negative 32. Negative. That's 70 degrees colder than your 40.
Now we talk about a sport where you're almost always indoors. You never have to deal with inclement weather. I've always heard the stories about, you know that story where the Chargers played the Bengals and it was like negative 20 degrees or something in Cincinnati. What does negative weather feel like?
It's just, well, you can only get to a, so it can only get so cold where it's just like, okay, it's cold, and it's just brittle. And it's just, you have the crispness where it's like, okay, you feel no moisture in the air. It's just like, okay, that's really cold. I can't take a deep breath because it'll start hurting my lungs.
Could you drop a bottle of water? Like, could you drop water on the asphalt and watch it freeze?
You can boil water and then throw it up, and the instant it goes up, it turns to like little snow and ice.
Wow. That was in Ireland, or you've dealt with negative temperatures now up there?
Finland. Finland. As of now, this week, I am currently in Ireland. So I am currently probably, doesn't matter what hour you're listening to this, I'm probably sitting at a pub with a Guinness and just chilling half drunk. That's what else I'm going to do in Ireland.
But, yeah, as we talk about, you know, obviously this is a basketball podcast, and we're sitting here talking about, you know, who's better at dealing with colder weather. I'll give you the leg up there because I'm pining for it all the time down here, because it's kind of like California in the winter. This is the place where people are like, man, I wish I lived in the South, you know, where it could be 40 degrees in December and I never have to deal with shit like this. And I always tell them, yeah, but you're never here in June where it's fucking 110 degrees and the heat index is 115 and you feel like you're about to pass out.
90 degrees, 90% humidity. Everything just looks and feels like soup.
You feel like you're in a sauna all
the
time.
It's just miserable.
It's horrible. But now we're going to be talking about our NBA team podcast as we continue our season preview for the season of 2015-16. And we've already gone through 10 of the teams from number 30 to number 21. We did the No Chance in Hell, which was one of our favorites. And then we did the Outsiders, you know, teams that we think have a scotch of a chance, to steal a line from Jason Biggs. And I think that was the movie called Loser. He said scotch. He said, could you turn it down just a scotch? And everyone's like, what the hell does a scotch mean? And he's like, I don't know, but could you just turn it down? But that's my tangent of the day. But, yeah, they have like a scotch of a chance, you know, for the Outsiders. Now we talk about the long shots. Now, these five, what kind of chance you give them? More than a scotch?
These are people who solidly around the bottom of the playoffs just right now. And with a little move or a little luck or a little good health,
great
you
trade.
Can make a run. Yes. These are teams who have foundations who aren't. You're not going to hear the term rebuilding, I think, today.
And they're also one bad move away from going to the cellar.
They're also a bad move away from being just above Philly. Yes.
Yes. So these are the long shots. Now, I don't really have any tie-ins for this one, unfortunately. The only one I have is a movie I saw. It was like a sports parody with David Koechner. You know who David Koechner is? He played Champ in the Anchorman movies.
Yep.
He did this horrible spoof movie, and I think it was called The Long Shots, if I'm saying this right. And it was him, and it was Melora Hardin who played Jan on The Office. It was a really shit movie, but that's the only thing I could go with. I think it was a comic character from the X-Men named Long Shot, but now I'm really, really dating myself. That's all. Oh, wait, no. You know what The Long Shots was? It was a movie with Ice Cube, and it was directed by Fred Durst.
Okay. Not really giving yourself with that.
Now I'm trying to remember. Oh, you know what that was called, David Koechner? It was called The Comes. You know, because, I mean, I could have done Replacements, which is actually a really good sports movie, but I couldn't figure anything that would, you know, associate with Replacements.
Just move on. Let's just get it.
Okay, we got to talk about the Indiana Pacers. The Indiana Pacers, we had the expectations, you know, both in the summer of 2014 got very suddenly tempered because of Paul George's broken leg from the U.S. Practice or scrimmage that they had, the Team USA scrimmage. She shockingly came back late in the year when the Pacers still had, like, a very small chance of still making the playoffs in the East. He played okay, but then he suffered a bit of a setback and walked off the court. The Pacers lost to the Grizzlies, and they missed the playoffs by a game. The Nets wound up making the playoffs and taking that spot. Were you surprised at – two-part question. A, were you surprised that Paul George came back with so few games left to play? And B, did he look different?
Well, he looked rusty, as you would expect him to be. You wouldn't expect him to be at 100% or even 90% at that point. Mm-hmm. I think they were more surprised how Indiana was close to being in the chase without him because, you know, we had mentioned, you know, that the best signings of the year were C.J. Watson and...
Yeah, those were like the stuff you're talking about with the Brooklyn Nets in the previous episode, that's kind of what Indiana did last year.
Yeah, they had a couple, like, we just need to solidify our bench.
Little singles.
Little just plays, you know, just enough to get by, and it really helped the team. And he, you know, he came back like, look, we can make the playoffs. I don't want to sit through, you know, 4 years of rebuilding again. We can still do something. Let's give it a run.
Yeah, it felt like that Larry Bird was kind of holding on, you know, to whatever remnants he had from that team that, you know, made the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row and lost to Miami both times, and see what he could squeeze out of them. And, you know, if Paul George comes back, great. And he did, and even though he was rusty, he still looked like Paul George to me. He looked like a great athlete at small forward who could defensively shut people down. I know he had a little bit of that setback at the end of the season that scared a lot of Pacer fans, thinking, oh no, another injury. We don't want another Sam Bowie, you know. But it was like he looked really good. You know, he did look good when he was good, but he was off on a couple of on a couple of games. They had to work his minutes in. But now they've really, Larry Bird has really taken the chance now. He let go Roy Hibbert in a trade. He let Watson, Sloan, and Scola, and Chris Copeland, who had gotten stabbed in that nightclub incident, he let them all walk. He traded Damian Rudish, who gave them a little bit of a hop in the at the forward position as a three-point shooter. And then he signed Monte Ellis to help out George Hill and Roddy Stuckey. What do you expect here with Monte? He played very well in Dallas after kind of ruining himself with a bad reputation in Milwaukee and Golden State.
So, yeah, but Dallas was one of those people teams where they all seem to conform to the system, with the exception mm-hmm. of Rondo. But I don't... George Hill, as we said, is just mediocre at best.
I agree.
I don't know where Monta is going to fit in that very small backcourt. And then, you know, there's talks that Bird wants to play Paul George at the four and play some small ball, because that's what
I read that. I heard he's displeased.
I would be displeased too, because Paul George is a stick. He's not even big enough to be a small.
Well, look at it this way. Maybe he meant that in the context of some conversation involving small ball. Because that's kind of what Bird is kind of aiming at here. He wants to play a little bit of small ball, and maybe that's what he meant by that. And the quote he put in was kind of taken out of context. That maybe he meant that you could kind of play George at the four at times.
I hope it was sort of taken out of context, because, you know, with the way it just sounded, and then George's negative reaction to it.
Well, you know why? Because players. Younger players, every time they're told, "Hey, we want to put you from like a lighter position to a heavier position," they get the sense that you're trying to tell them that they're slowing down.
Yeah,
that you want to save their minutes.
I don't see how it's going to save their minutes. If he'll be banging a lot more, mm-hmm. where he is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The problem I have with this team this year is, okay, you let Hibbert go, who just, you know, okay, he lost his smile and the. It sort of became toxic there.
Uh-huh.
But you replaced them with... You're putting a lot of... not emphasis. You're putting a lot of faith in Jordan Hill and Miles Leonard.
Miles Turner.
Miles Turner. I'm going to say Miles Leonard.
You got Myers Leonard on the brain from Portland.
I'm going to make that mistake all year long. You put a faith in
if Turner. If you put them beside each other, you're not going to make the difference.
Turner didn't do anything in Texas, and Jordan Hill, as much as you want to, you know, you're sort of a bigger fan than I am.
He's a good rebounder.
Of him, but he's 28 now. He's never averaged more than 27 minutes.
You think it's strange that they have three Hills? Like, last year they had, like, three or four CJs, and yeah. Now they have three Hills. George
they're
Hill,
just all
Solomon
going for
Hill
just the same... They're just all going for confusion. It's like, okay, who's got Hill? I got Hill.
yeah, Jordan Hill's a guy I like. You know, I always felt in Lakerland like he overachieved, even though he got paid a little bit more than expected because they wanted to just keep him around for another year so that they could just waste salary. You know, because they didn't want to make any moves. I felt like the Lakers just decided to give him, you know, a decent contract for 1 year, and now he's in Indiana. They got Chase Buttinger in that trade that involved Rudej. They kept Lavoy Allen. Ian Mahimi is in his last year. It feels like Ian Mahimi's been there for like 15 years. They drafted, like you talked about, Miles Turner, the big man out of Texas. A lot more nimble than people expect. He can actually hit an outside shot, even though he's kind of a big boy. And then there's Joseph Young, the guard out of Oregon. You and I both like him. And they picked up Glenn Robinson III, who played pretty well in summer league.
who is also a player.
And then Rakeem Christmas, who they got in a dump trade with Cleveland. You know, a big man out of Syracuse who's going to be a rookie, too. Shane Whittington is still there. I didn't really see him a lot last year, so I can't comment on him too much. It's a team that's kind of designed to play a little faster, I would be safe to say. You know, C.J. Miles is still there, and, you know, he had a pretty good year last year. Solomon Hill played well. I think they're going to miss Donald Sloan. I thought Donald Sloan gave them a lot. He's off in Brooklyn now. But what kind of change in style do you expect, if there is one at all?
There's going to have to be a change with adding Monta Ellis. And
really, does it have to be offensively driven, 24th in points per game?
It's going to have to be now with with that. And, you know, Hibbert, although he faded away on the offense, he still was there defensively. And, you know, Jordan Hill, not really the rebounding big stout player. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying. I was like, oh, sometimes we have to, you know, you're going to have Paul George at the four. Well, it's like, yeah, because all you have sort of is Solomon Hill as your only de facto power forward right now.
Yeah, him and LaVoy Allen. You're kind of LaVoy Allen. I've seen Allen play center a lot too, so we'll see. I mean, we've talked about this a million times with the Warriors. It's a small league now, so everybody can get away with playing center. I mean, shit, you can play LeBron at center and get away with it if you want to.
It's a smaller league, but you don't have. Okay, fine. If you're moving George to center, and it's just like, okay, now I got Chase Buttinger as the four, and it's just
that would be stupid.
Now you're just getting a little ugly and.
Now their defense is their calling card, and it was the case last year without Paul George. And George is one of the best defensive small forwards in the league. Period. End of story. He's awesome. He can shut down a guy if he feels like it with those long arms and the ability to.
Well,
get
he
steals.
Was. We don't know now.
I still think he can. Like, I saw enough in that few games that I saw where he can still do it. You know, he just needed a little bit. He was just a little too rusty, like you were talking about.
He was a little too rusty, but we don't, you know, hopefully he's back to being who he was. But if he isn't, then this team is sort of doomed, which is sort of why they're here, because they do have the potential to move up. They also, you know, you're higher on this team than I am.
I just think that the Pacers have a winning pedigree under Bird.
Pedigree. It's just this team is, I don't see how Monta Ellis fits that team at all. He is not that team-driven pedigree guy.
He is a bit of a fish out of water, I agree. When they signed him, I felt like that's kind of a weird fit. But that was also around the off the heels of the reports that Bird wanted to drastically change the look of the team. But the funny part was they did the signing with Monte, they traded Hibbert, and then they didn't really change anything else.
Yeah, that was
That's what kind of like threw me off.
That's like, okay, like we're waiting for now you're a move away. What's your move? Okay, you're going to move Monta to the one and just, you know, George Hill sort of?
I think they have a big move in them. You talked about Detroit. I think Indiana is going to be one of those teams that tries to make a big move. Like, they might be one of those teams that's kind of in the middle of the pack in the playoffs, possibly, and then they say, okay, we need to do something.
And that's why they're here, right in the middle, to go either way, I think.
Because you're one move away. Exactly. You're one move away either way. You could either shoot up or you could go right to the shitter. Now we're talking. It's speaking of going to the shitter fast. They did it at the end of the season. Let's talk about the Dallas Mavericks. They had quite the eventful summer, did they?
They have just been every year. It's just all you hear is about how they strike out and how Cuban just can't.
They did even worse. They hit a home run and then they took it away on instant replay.
Yeah, just struck out and then replaced it with really.
Or did they hit a home run with DeAndre Jordan? Do you think that was going to work out?
It would have worked out better than what they had.
Let's talk a little bit about the season they had. Offensively, they were phenomenal. You know, third in points, fifth in field goal percentage, seventh in threes made. They played fast. They didn't make apologies about it. They were eighth in assists. Even with Rondo there, they were still a pretty good offense. They were better on offense before the Rondo trade was made. But like you were alluding to, even though they had a 50-32 season, they were a 7 seed. They wound up playing the Houston Rockets, who were rivals from their own division in the Southwest. And, man, Rondo just went into the shitter those last few months. It felt a little bit like he didn't belong there in the first place, but it really got rough between him, Carlisle, and Mark Cuban in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it just got really ugly, and you know, it's one of those things where you make that trade, then what happens? Everyone else in the West made a big trade. You know, everyone's like, oh, we got to go do something, and it was like, oh, now all our stuff is negated. But you know, it's one of those things. Okay, yeah, you lost out on you know,
DeAndre.
On the big prize of the fall. And who knows who would have signed after DeAndre Jordan.
Well, they got Wesley Matthews. But the problem with Wesley is that they gave him more money to try to convince him to stick around.
Well, that's the thing. You got Wesley cheap, and what would have happened if DeAndre's here? Now, okay, you lost him, so now you had to piece together, you know, getting JaVale McGee.
Yeah, they put it. They had to do a little bit of patchwork, unfortunately. Mr. Shark Tank, Mark Cuban, Zsa Pachulia, Samuel D'Alembert, who had played there before. They picked up Brandon Ashley, who was an undrafted rookie. They picked up Salah Majiri, I think his name is. He had played in Afro Basket, and he played really well, but I don't know what he can realistically offer in the NBA right now.
Well, that I think is just the same thing as they drafted that Indian kid out of high school, just for marketing.
Satnam Singh.
Yeah, it's just for marketing opportunities. Let's put him in the D League. If he does something, that's great. If not, we now have people who are tuning in to see Dallas Mavericks.
Though. You are so glad that JaVale McGee, Deron Williams, and Zsa Pachulia are now on the same team.
That's just the... Well, I have no problem with Zsa.
No, but he's just an awkward, dorky kind of player.
He's just old now.
Yeah.
He's just sort of past his prime, and, you know, McGee and Williams are just more... We need to save whatever.
What can Deron Williams? This almost happened in 2012, and a lot was made about him getting max money, and he stayed in Brooklyn at the time. What can Deron Williams really offer now in Dallas?
He can offer. He has to offer near all-star numbers or near starter numbers for this team to be where you put them here.
Well, Rick Carlisle, like you said, they kind of conformed to the system there. And, you know, he did it with J.J. Barea, who came back last year. He did it with Monte Ellis. He did it with Jason Kidd. You know, and Jason Kidd is sort of an out-of-the-box point guard. He was able to conform to what Carlisle wanted to a lot of success. Jameer Nelson even did it early last year before they traded him in the Rondo trade. I wonder if Carlisle is smart enough where he will find a way to get the best out of what he has left in Deron Williams and try to push him. But you worry about the emotional level of Deron because of all the stories that you've heard about Williams not really responding well to challenges, personal challenges.
Exactly. And, you know, Raymond Felton had his chance there, did nothing.
Still there, though, because he had a player option.
Well, his contract.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted him. And if you're relying on J.J. Barea to be your starting point guard, that's what I'm saying. He has to put up, you know, high-level numbers for this team to be good because they've, you know, getting Matthews for Monte Ellis, you're leaving some points on the table. They're not going to be third points per game against this.
No, I will say this, looking at it on paper, Wesley Matthews and Chandler Parsons is a really efficient offensive combination. And you add to it Nowitzki, who is still, I mean, I know he went to the All-Star game. He had so many great years. He's a Hall of Fame player. God bless Dirk Nowitzki. But he's near the end.
He has nothing left.
I wouldn't say nothing left. I think he can average about 17 a game.
D'Alembert was there once and flunked out of Dallas miserably. Mm-hmm. JaVale McGee, I don't even know if he feels like playing anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's that's who you replaced Tyson Chandler with.
So they make the playoffs almost every year. The only time they didn't make it since like 2001 was in 2013. Why do you think they're not going to make the playoffs this time?
Just look at that roster. It's a very fragile.
It's not a horrible roster.
You got Deron Williams. You got Wesley Matthews, both injured. D'Alembert has he's allergic to talent. McGee, we don't know where he is. So all you really have is just Parsons, who's just sitting there. Mm-hmm. As you know, I got paid. Now what do I do? I was injured last year. So this is my time to shine. This is my team now. What? When did this happen?
Nowitzki is the returning scorer. Then there's Parsons. How much are they going to miss Tyson Chandler, and then to a smaller degree, Amari Stoudemire?
Stoudemire didn't provide as much as I thought they would have. He would have. Mm-hmm. But that could just been the team was already a lost cause and so divided. But they're going to, losing Aminu and Tyson Chandler are going to kill them.
Well, defensively, that kills them, and they were a bad defensive squad as it was.
Exactly, because they were serviceable.
Oh, yeah. They got so desperate with Harden that they had to put Aminu on Harden because no one else could guard him. It wasn't that Aminu did a great job. It was that that's all they had.
Exactly. Because of those two guys, they were serviceable. Now they're just terrible.
Well, now you got Wesley Matthews, who's one of the perennial 3-and-D guys, though, at small forward.
Yeah, but he's not gonna come back with a full spring in his step. He's gonna be rusty for a long time.
The Achilles tendon injury that he suffered, yeah.
Yeah, that's not just that's not an ACL one. Achilles is a whole different beast.
Justin Anderson in the first round, I know that Mark Cuban's had a history sometimes of in the first round of the draft not really scoring well, but I think Justin Anderson can provide something. He came from Virginia. He's got like the size of a power forward, but he plays like a small forward. He's defensively minded coming out of Virginia with Tony Bennett as his coach. So I kind of like that one just to get my little rookie section out of the way. John Jenkins is a good shooter. He came from Atlanta. Outside of that, it's a bit of a mystery team, even though I do think they have a lot of parts in place. I like them a little bit more than some of the other teams.
Well, yeah, because they're not rebuilding. They have a few players.
Well, that's the funny part. They're not always they're not rebuilding, but they're always resetting.
They're always trying to hit the home run. That's the problem. Is they keep stripping down to be like, oh, we're gonna hit the home run. Oh, we missed it. And then
exactly. And the funny part is when they didn't hit the home run when they won the NBA championship in 2011. It was just a lot of good additions over accumulation of like two or three seasons.
Yep.
They picked up Marion, Sean Marion here, Jason Kidd there, and then eventually some guys like Jason Terry, J.J. Barea, Peja Stojakovic, like they all kind of came from different places, and they all sort of kind of built chemistry around each other. You're never going to build chemistry if you keep just saying, oh, well, we didn't get this guy, so we're just going to add this one and this one and this one and see how it works. But that's not how chemistry worked.
Yeah.
Guys to work to play together.
Again, it doesn't bode well if you're signing people and getting draft picks just for marketing value.
Let's talk about the Phoenix Suns as we move on to the Pacific Division. We actually have two of them out of the Pacific Division, but this is the first one we're going to be talking about, is that's Phoenix. Phoenix obviously was the surprise team in 2014. Nobody expected them to be even sniffing the playoffs, including you and me. It happened totally by surprise. But they slipped back after a trade that totally blew up the team, or a combination of trades, one involving trading Goran Dragic to the Miami Heat, and the other one where they traded Isaiah Thomas to the Boston Celtics, and Miami and Boston are both saying, well, thanks a lot, because they're both working out really well for them, and Phoenix is sort of kind of left scratching their heads. They still have Eric Bledsoe in the point guard position as their star guard. They did pick up Tyson Chandler, who had just left the team we mentioned, the Dallas Mavericks. Did you like that signing?
Well, you can't. The sad thing is, you can't bet against Tyson Chandler, because even though how old he is now, he's still a defensive stalwart.
And his offensive efficiency, because of the dunks and the putbacks, is actually pretty high.
Yeah,
he doesn't take a bad shot because he doesn't try.
He doesn't take a bad shot, and the problem is, as much as I want to like Alex Len, he's never on the court because he's always injured with something.
Yeah.
So this puts somebody in there, a big body, who, Phoenix has never been known for defense, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you get him in there, who's still, top five defensive player. You can even say he's top two defensive center, still even at his age, because that's a rare phrase.
They stuck to their word, Neil McDonough did. Not Neil McDonough. What's his name again?
Ronald
Ryan
McDonough?
McDonough? Neil McDonough's an actor, right?
I don't.
Well, whatever. It's Sean McDonough. it's ESPN Sean McDonough's brother, whatever his name is. I think his name is Ryan. But McDonough made good because he said he was going to keep Brian tonight after they traded for him from Milwaukee when they did that three-way swap, and he did. He kept Brandon Knight on pretty decent money to play alongside Eric Bledsoe. I just don't know if this is going to work.
Decent money? You have Dragic, you have Isaiah Thomas, and then Bledsoe, and you're like, oh, this is a clusterfuck, it failed. No, the whole plan is Brandon Knight was our guy all along. Like, no, nobody believes that.
I don't think that was
the plan. And they've overpaid for him. Like, who is who was bidding for this guy who
So you hate the re-signing? You hated the deal in the first place?
I didn't understand. Nobody liked the deal to get, with Dragic and Thomas. You don't get rid of both and then bring in the third guy and then try to defend the third guy. It just makes no sense because him and Bledsoe are essentially the same style player.
Here's what I didn't like about it. In October, they did this game of chicken with the agent for Eric Bledsoe because he was a restricted free agent. Nobody wanted to do a tender, so they sort of kind of waited to the to the midnight hour until they could try to put together a deal. They finally agreed on an extension, and I felt like that was the Suns telling Bledsoe, "Look, I know we have Dragic and I know we have Isaiah Thomas too, but you're going to be our guy. So what do you do to help him out? You give him a guard that's going to be butting heads with him all the time because he plays just like him, you know? And I know they both came from Kentucky, but that has nothing to do with it because they didn't play together. So whenever they say, well, you got the two Kentucky boys from under Calipari, it's like, yeah, but they didn't. They played in different seasons, and they play very similarly. They like to have the ball in their hands. They're kind of like stealth scorers. They're not incredibly explosive, but they're able to they're able to sneak in their points every now and then, and they're not great shooters. So I don't understand this. You've got Bledsoe, and you get a player that's sort of like a worser version of Eric Bledsoe.
And the Bledsoe thing, don't forget, the only reason they made that deal is because Minnesota offered him a...
Yeah, there was rumors that they were gonna.
Yeah, so that's why it
they
had
were
to
give
get
him
done.
The big deal. Yeah, and they had to match it. Yeah,
but you draft the same player. I don't know which of the Morris twins they got.
They have Markeith.
But is he the good one or the bad one?
But Markeith is very unhappy and he wants out.
Yeah, he wants out. He was unhappy. He also got fined for his stupid comments. Mm-hmm. But is he the good one or the bad one? I don't know. It just depends what week it is. It seems like odd weeks he's good, even weeks he's bad. Then you let Gerald Green go on top of it. You trade a first-round pick to Boston to get Brandon Wright and then blow up your team and then let him leave. And
yeah, he went to the Grizzlies.
It's just a lot of... team makes no sense.
They made a... Now, listen, I like some of the combination of what they're bringing in and what they already have in terms of their youth, okay? I know you don't like Alex Len that much, but he did show a few signs that he could rebound when healthy.
No, I do like Len. He just can't get on the court. He's injured. I've never seen anybody have more pinky and thumb injuries than him.
Maybe Edward Scissorhands. Mirza Teletovic, even though he had the lung problem that sidelined him a lot and it kind of hurt his stock going into free agency, he's a good player. Like, he really can shoot the ball. Devin Booker, I saw in Kentucky. He can play. TJ Warren is a really good scorer. He's more of a volume scorer. He's not going to wow you with his athleticism, but he's a guy that can get buckets really fast. Archie Goodwin is a good athlete. They picked up John Luer. Ronnie Price came over, and then they picked up a couple of other kind of miscellaneous guys like Sonny Weems and Corey Jefferson and Henry Sims. We'll see what they work out. But the combination of guys like Teletovic, Booker, Warren, Goodwin, and then P.J. Tucker, who's their perennial starting small forward, I think that's a pretty decent combination. The problem is they're in the Western Conference.
It's decent. It's not spectacular. Even if Phoenix was in the East, I'd be like, yeah, okay, two point guards who play the same thing, injured center, forward.
I've always said this with Phoenix. Like, when they ask, what does Phoenix need? I say, I'll tell you what Phoenix needs. They need a superstar. What do you think they needed in 1993? They needed a Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Once they got a Charles Barkley, they were set. Once they got a Steve Nash, they were set. They had it made in the shade. They need a superstar. They need somebody who's willing to come over and say, this is my team. I'm going to mold this team. Because they just don't really have that kind of a team right now. They have a lot of nice pieces, but they don't really have that one shining piece.
They don't have shining pieces, nor do they have assets that, like, oh, we could trade.
I think they have enough assets to collectively put together to make a big trade.
But it's like you like Archie Goodwin. He's starting to play, but he's been so buried in the guards. you know, he doesn't have high value. We've seen what happened with Morris. He doesn't have a high value.
Well, we might see him pick up a little this year because I think they're all bound to get better, more minutes, just because.
They're going to have more minutes, but that doesn't mean they're essentially a better team. Like, well, after that trade, they just collapsed, and I don't see them bouncing back from that.
And let me say this, too. Between Markieff and Marcus, they were smart because Markieff is the better one.
Well, now he's the unhappy one, so.
Yeah, but he's the unhappy better one. Marcus does not have the same size and strength that Markieff has. Markieff can truly play the four position, whereas Marcus is sort of a tweener.
All right. Hopefully he can find his smile and play.
Everybody's losing their smile.
I know, it's such a
the one funny part about him is that they had all these guards, but they were 27th in assists. Why?
Everybody wanted to play hero ball. Nobody wanted to pass because they know if they pass, they're never going to get it back.
Yeah, you talked about their team being the franchise being like historically bad defensively, and again, they were 26th in points allowed. No shock. They like the pace. They like to shoot threes. They need to get better at getting to the free throw line. And rebounding-wise, I think Tyson Chandler can definitely help him out. They were 17th. I think that'll pick up with Chandler there. That's why I thought that was one of the better signings that nobody really talked too much about. I do worry about the rest of the additions that they had, but I do think it's a good mixture. I just don't know if it's good enough to make headway in the Pacific Division or in the Western Conference is my problem.
Correct.
All right, and so we're going to be going on to the Sacramento Kings. Now, me and Adam went back and forth about this when we did the long shots. I actually like the Detroit Pistons in this spot because I feel like the Pistons in the East could actually get a little more headway, there's that word again, to move up in the Eastern Conference compared to the Sacramento Kings and the Western Conference. And honest to God, I felt like, you know, person to person by person, that the Pistons are probably just as good of a team as the Kings are. What do you like about the Sacramento Kings that not everybody is seeing right now?
Before this past year, this half season, tell me the last time George Karl was below 500.
Give me a minute.
You could just give a team. You don't even need to give a year.
Milwaukee in 2003.
No, he was 500 that year, just skirted by. That was when he got fired by Golden State.
In 87?
In 87.
That was the Sleepy Floyd game, when Sleepy Floyd went off on the Lakers.
Yep, that was the last time he was below 500. So, with somebody like that, who's been with lots of, you know, he had the Moody Ray Allens. He had the Paytons and the Kemps and the...
Remember when he brought in Andre Miller, and Andre Miller didn't want to be there? And now Andre Miller is one of his favorite players.
And now Andre Miller is like, he's like the smartest guy in the room. He's like, oh man, I've learned so much, and oh boy. So that's one of those things is I can't bet against him based upon the track record and the number of head cases he's taken. Granted, this is a whole new level of, this is like a Fox sitcom of, you know, he's been known for cleaning up projects. Little did he know, it's just like, oh boy, this team is...
Why did you have to say Fox? CBS has so many much worse sitcoms.
Yeah, but Fox is known for having stupid premises.
Last Man on Earth's a good premise.
Oh, we're now nitpicking sitcoms. This is what we're reduced to?
Well, we could talk about the WB. You remember Unhappily Ever After when they had, like, that talking bunny and shit?
Talking bunny and...
the Parenthood with Robert Townsend and this is like the WB version. Like I just don't understand it. Or maybe it is the CBS version. It's like a high end type of sitcom where it's really stupid, but it really could work. That's the funny part.
You got, you know, because every year we mention, like, what's the problem with Sacramento? When Jason Thompson is your longest standing guy, it's because he's mediocre and, well, he's there. We drafted him because he was the best guy we tried out, and he stayed here this long because he's there. You got to, you know, Sas Castillo trade aside, they got rid of a lot of baggage and a lot of the depth and garbage. Like Thompson, they got rid of Landry and Derek Williams. All tweener fours.
They were going nowhere fast.
Exactly.
George Karl knew it.
Stauskas, you said they gave him away.
Well, Stauskas they gave up on too fast. That's the one guy, that's the one piece that I think they gave up in that trade, like as a current player, where they said, I'm not really sure, but then they decided to pull the trigger anyway because they really wanted that cap space. Giving up the draft picks to Philadelphia in that trade was beyond stupid.
That wasn't giving a little too much, but with Stauskas, you have the same player in Ben McLemore. Mm-hmm. Literally the same player.
So now you're telling Ben McLemore, okay, you're the guy, now it's sink or swim.
Basically, the signings they have made, give me a bad signing. Between Rondo, they got him cheap.
Rondo could really ruin your team if he's unhappy.
He could.
But he doesn't seem unhappy. It seems like he really wanted to go there.
Kostakoufos, solid.
Kostakoufos was a very good signing.
Marco Bellinelli,
very
solid.
Good signing.
Mm-hmm. Holly Stein draft pick.
Loved it.
Karan
Butler. I thought that was the best fit they could have done.
Karan Butler as a locker room influence.
Decent. I mean, but what did he do in Detroit?
No, it doesn't matter what he does in the court. He's sort of the Minnesota, I'm going to sit next to Ben McLemore. I'm going to teach him how to play. I'm going to sit next to Cousins and tell him how to be a professional.
And they also got little Steph, Seth Curry.
They got Seth Curry, Quincy Acey came back, who...
Yeah.
He did. He wasn't terrible in...
He's nasty. You remember when he got in that fight with the Wizards on Christmas Day? You know you're a nasty player when you fight on Christmas Day.
Yep. He found his game in New York. And the one signing I sort of didn't like is when they let McCallum go. You watched the last 2 weeks, he could have provided something. And, you know, obviously there was no need for him with Rondo and having
I think that was part of it. With Rondo there along with Darren Collison, there was going to be no room for McCollum, so there was no reason to try to keep him. I think that was one of the
That could be one where he might become good.
Do you think they regret re-signing Rudy Gay?
No, because Rudy Gay still has talent.
That happened during the Malone regime.
That did have that happen, but it's not. That was at a time when, you know, he also. That was one of those trades where both teams benefited. Mm-hmm. Because he found his game again. He found his style. He works well with Cousins. And I don't think it was a terrible trade. Now that, you know, you could say anything was a terrible trade or signing. But with the cap being high now, it's so irrelevant.
Very random question. Do you think Nancy Lieberman being there is going to have any kind of effect? You know, because there was a lot of talk about Lieberman as being one of the female assistant coaches now.
No, I don't see how that's going to benefit anything other than, you know, that.
Just throwing it out there.
That might be one of those, maybe she can keep the locker room sort of in line. They might be a little, you know, less rowdy with a female. I have no clue, but, you know, Gay is fine for now. He's not, you know, he has 3 years left with, you know, 2 years.
I'll say this for Rudy Gay. He's not at the end. Like
he's
a
not,
couple of
He's not at the end, but, okay,
about.
Here's his numbers the next 3 years. 12, 13, and 14 million. Not overpriced.
Yeah, but in 3 years, that might be bad.
In 3 years, that'll be bad, but in 3 years, McLemore will be taking him over.
And it won't look like such a bad deal. I really love Willie Cauley-Stein. I saw him in Summer League. He looked just like I thought he would. He's basically a non-dumb version of JaVale McGee. Crazy long, he can defend. If he's got a good head on his shoulders and he doesn't get lazy, I think he could be a great asset for them. Bellinelli is a guy... that honest to God, because we talked about the Euros in a previous episode, as the years have gone along, he's actually gotten better.
So just look, you know, don't say who the, you know, on paper who the team is. You have a pass first point guard, a slashing guard, a straight up shooting three, a beast top five center, and a defensive player who will just sit and protect the rim, doesn't look to score.
it's a good team. It's a good team. But it didn't help out at the end of last year with the roster that they had before that with George Karl. It kind of looked like the same bad team.
It was the same bad team, but again, you had Derek Williams taking up minutes. You had Jason Thompson mediocre-ing the place up. Carl Landry, I don't know if he even played or not. And, you know, what do we do with Stauskas? Okay, he's in, but he's struggling. Let's take McLemore out. We're platooning him.
I know with the stuff about the new playoff seedings, there's been talk about, well, the divisions don't matter. But I will say this. I think there's something to be said that Sacramento is in a division that has the Golden State Warriors, the LA Clippers, and the Phoenix Suns. All up-tempo teams. All very efficient offenses. And I think the Kings want to be that kind of team that plays fast. I think that's why they got George Karl. But when you have Cousins, you know, it's hard to play fast because, you know, he kind of lazies up on possessions. If you have more possessions, he might not be as focused on every single one. I think that was one of the reasons why they were so low in assists and blocks and points allowed. They were like in the bottom three and all of that. They didn't take a lot of threes. I think that's definitely going to change with Bellinelli there. But offensively, I think there's definitely going to be improvement. They were middle of the pack last year, but with Cousins at the head and with a lot of these additions, I think they're probably going to be somewhere around the top 10.
Well, yeah, there's also two seasons last year with them. There was before Cousins got injured, they were playing better than I think anyone expected. And then Cousins got his, what was it, like staph infection or mono or some weird... Mm-hmm. And then, okay, they fire him alone, and then you bring in somebody nobody likes, and then the team just quit on him pretty much. And then it was a whole separate story, and you can't really combine them both. And then Karl came in and just said, okay, keep doing what you do. I'm just going to analyze you now.
What do you think about Vlade Divac getting the band back together? Hiring guys like Bobby Jackson and Veja Stojakovic.
Well, that's what they all do.
Is that the best team? 02, we're talking about 2002, obviously. Is that the best team that ever won a title?
They got robbed.
Oh, come on, man. They had a game 7 at home. Lost to fair and square.
They got, yeah, well, of course. It comes down, you know you're not going to lose unless it's literally a buzzer-beating shot or the last second field goal or a Hail Mary. Yeah, you can't blame a 48-minute, you know, full contest on one. But, you know, it was a screw job.
But, yeah, that's the thing. You're trying to hold on to what you were good at in the past, you know. And so you got Divac there replacing D'Alessandro, Pete D'Alessandro, who went to the Denver Nuggets. And so Divac is there, and he's trying to figure out how to be a general manager. A lot of people were questioning his ability to even be one after the Sixers trade because it looks so one-sided. But then he kind of came back with a couple of deals that seems to – seem to balance out the roster. How good, to finish this off, how good is DeMarcus Cousins? Forget the baggage.
If he wants to be, he could be the best.
The best big man in the NBA.
Yes.
The best center.
If he doesn't want to be, top 5.
Mm-hmm. But still an all-star.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's that good. Of all the players that are kind of still in this like section that we're talking about, he's the best. I think he's better than Paul George, or more impactful. You know, I think he's better than Dirk is now.
That's why I fought to put him in this section. You know, you could have your pistol, but you have a Cousins, and you've got a coach who's known for winning. You know, yes, so is Van Gundy, but Van Gundy's just doing weird signings.
The difference, though, is that Cousins and Karl do not see eye to eye.
They haven't yet, but who knows... Strange things happen if you start winning, as we've seen in any sport.
Oh, winning cures all ills. Like
exactly,
say. It's true. But it depends on, you know, they got on a winning streak early, and then the moment things kind of broke bad, they fired Malone. Now I don't think Carl's in that position. I don't think the water's that hot. So we'll see what happens if they get hot and then they kind of cool off again. Or if they get on a hot streak for maybe a month or two and all of a sudden people are talking about, oh, wow, Vivek Renadave is a genius, you know.
So well, nobody's going to say that. All he could do is continue to hurt his...
And now we're going to the Northwest Division. This is going to be the last team on this category for the long shots. And we're going to stay in the Western Conference. This will be our third Western, or actually our fourth Western Conference. We only had one Eastern Conference team in the long shots. What does that say?
They were all in the bottom basement.
And this one is, I like this team. I'm not sure. I'm gonna find out where you're at, because I'm not sure where you're at with these guys. And that's the Utah Jazz. I know that they had a losing season. They were 38-44, same record as the Brooklyn Nets, who made the playoffs, and the Indiana Pacers, who just barely missed. But I really liked where this team was going at the end of last year. Defensively, they were stout. I mean, really stout. And there's a lot of reasons why, but and we'll get to that in a second. But what did you like about the Utah Jazz?
What did I like about them? Mm-hmm. You liked them much, much more than I did, but they you could finally see how what happens when you start rebuilding. What happens if you just stay with the plan and, okay, you just don't abandon midship like so many teams seem to be doing and try to switch up.
Do you like, at the end of the day, did you like them re-signing Gordon Hayward to that max level contract at $18 or $19
million? He has been, he's probably the most underrated player in the NBA right now. Mm-hmm. He's putting up all-star numbers, just nobody noticed him because he's on Utah. Favors is still getting better.
He's a very good power forward. He's kind of like Al Jefferson, who was one of his teammates.
And he's also young still. Mm-hmm. He came in at a very, I think it was he 18 when he still came in?
Well, he got drafted by the Nets, and then they used him as a bargaining chip in the Darren Williams trade.
Yep, but it took him a while to get going. The only thing that sort of worries about this team is you're putting a lot of faith in Rudy Gobert.
Well, there's a reason why.
You could say there's a reason why, but you only saw maybe, what, 15 games, 20 games of him just sort of dominating, and it could just be, so he's doing it at Eurobasket, but you're playing against garbage players there, too.
Against Spain. I mean, he looked good against the good teams in Eurobasket, too. I'm just trying to vouch for him.
Well, I'm
higher on Gobert than others. I think Gobert is one of the best centers in the NBA already.
See, I don't know. It's very high on just a very limited spectrum of able
He played 26 minutes. He averaged 8 points, and he had 9.5 rebounds, 3.2 offensive, 60% from the field, which is average for a center, or a little bit above average, to be honest. But here's the key, 2.3 blocks per game. He's a great rim protector, and he's not scared to go after people.
Yeah, that's the thing. But again, very limited scope to judge on. You lose Dante Exum for the year with his...
Now, it's not like that's such a killer. I've read all these stories like, man, Dante Exum is going to... I mean, that's going to break their back. It's like, dude, he barely played last year.
But you're replacing him with Alec Burks, who they tried to convert to a shooting guard.
Who also barely played last year. So you don't really know what you have.
They try to move him to a two, and then he had a shoulder injury and was out all year. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what he could bring in. We sort of know Trey Burke. You know, he's
they wanted him to be a backup, and now they're sort of forced to put him in as starter.
You know that trade. You know, they traded up for him and traded Shabazz Muhammad and mm-hmm. Gorgui Dieng. You know, it's beginning to seem like Minnesota sort of won that trade because Burke sort of has a limited upside, I think.
Yeah, that's agreeable. I can agree with that.
And you bring in a lot more Euros. Mm-hmm. Tibor Pleiss was one of the highest-rated Euros left from Germany.
Raul Nato out of Brazil.
And Raul Nato is
They were sort of forced to do that because of the Exum injury, and also, like you had already said before, Olivier Hanlon took a deal on the foreign side just so he can get better.
No NBA out, and then, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. There was an NBA
open. And it also forced them to keep Bryce Cotton, who they liked a lot, you know, at the end of the year, gave him a little bit of a jolt.
But he's more D-League.
Yeah, and Rodney Hood played a lot of minutes. You see him playing a lot more minutes?
Rodney Hood played minutes, but, you know, that was only because of the Alec Burks injury. Mm-hmm. He was sort of forced in, and was he decent? Yeah, he was decent, but...
He was okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, really is, I guess you could say what will Neto bring him? Because he's really sort of the unknown in this group.
What I like about this team, outside of the backcourt, is that they really have a lot of, they're kind of a little bit like Milwaukee, in that they have a lot of really, like, long arm, kind of, like, you know, wing type of players, guys like, you know, or bigger guys, guys like Gobert, Favors, even Hayward has a good wingspan, Rodney Hood, who can play small forward, Trey Lyles, who's a lot taller than people expected, coming out of Kentucky, and then Trevor Booker, who's a big man. They have a lot of size there, and they have a lot of wingspan there, but then you look at the guards, and they're so small. You know,
they're small, and then they have no depth now. And that's why I was going to say Neto is sort of the X factor, because if he fails as sort of a backup, it's just as useless. And Burke, he's nothing spectacular. Okay, you don't really have a point guard anymore.
Yeah.
Because no matter what Exum gave you defense. He was solid on defense, but he was anemic on offense.
Oh, yeah, his offense has such a ways to go. But he seemed to be coming around, but he played all 82 games. You know, before the injury. So, you know, obviously they had big plans for him, and they were going to be patient enough to wait to see if it would come around. So, unfortunately, he's going to be out for quite a while. I don't know if he'll be able to come back from it this season. Maybe March, possibly.
He'll probably just keep back.
Quinn Snyder did some things with this team that I really liked. I liked that they played at the slowest pace in the NBA so that they could give the time for the kids to learn, and they didn't turn over the roster too much. The only guys that are gone are Dante Exum due to injury, and Jeremy Evans went to the Mavericks. The only additions they have is, like you said, Place, or Plyce, whichever, tomato-tomato, Raul Neto, Jeff Withey, and then they drafted Lyles, and they brought in J.J. O'Brien. After that, it's the same team. I like the consistency. I like the fact that, you know, Dennis Lindsay there really wants to stick with this team and not change too many things because they want to let the players learn together how to win. And I like the defensive mindset. I like the fact that they really want to get better defensively first before anything else.
Well, that was the thing. It's just, you know, it's another year in the progression. It's in that last year. Like, oh, they're a year or two away still. What happens, you signed all your people you need to, and that's going to be Orlando's problem in the next year, is now, you know, what do we do? Who do you choose to sign? Okay, somebody tried poaching Haywood. Okay, what do you want to do? Let's sign him. Okay, it turned out really well. He's playing good. You let Cantor go because there wasn't enough room for him.
I think the Cantor move is brilliant because it gave the room for Gobert to play and show what he had. Let me give you an example. What if you kept Cantor, and then you never gave that playing time to Gobert, and you traded him? Kind of like Noah Vonleh got traded from Charlotte to Portland.
Well, that'd be
it would have looked like a horrible move.
Well, who knows if he would have taken off somewhere else. He could have just been, like, discouraged. Mm-hmm. And then just like, I'm just going to go back to Europe.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Gobert's that kind of player. I think Gobert was one of those guys that would have been really good wherever he went. You know, now let me tell you, he's the new Mark Eaton. He's one of those guys who you're gonna see on the bad end of a poster every now and then. Okay, Wiggins did it to him like twice, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Wiggins got like a nasty fucking dunk on him. But he is a force. He's a center. He's a force at center. Defensively, you know, a little bit like Cauley Stein is a guy that's sort of more cover ground. Tyson Chandler too. Tyson Chandler is more of a guy who could go all over the court and try to guard a guy, whereas Rudy is a true shot blocker. He's going to be in that paint, and you got to get through him. He's the last line of defense. And that's what I like. He's old school.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to, like you were trying to talk me into the Kings, I'm trying to talk you into the Jazz.
I'm sold on the Jazz here, but, you know, you were trying to move them up another notch, and I'm like, I just don't see
that.
So
you're not going to be keeping your eye on him.
I'm keeping one eye on him. It's just their backcourt sort of worries me. Their front court says, okay, I'm sold. But the backcourt's like, no, they shouldn't be.
Do you think they have any need to improve on offense? They were a bad offense as it was.
Yes.
But what do they do? Like, what do you do? Do you give the ball more to Rodney Hood and Trey Lyles? I mean, like.
Well, you know, I think a lot of what is Alec Burks comes back with? Is he going to be a 3-point shooter? Is he going to be a point guard? Is he going to be a slasher? Is he just going to be mediocre? We don't know what type of player he'll be now with that shoulder injury, because that's a, you know, it's not an ACL injury. That's not, now you're talking about shooting motion.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what he, if he comes back as a dud, And, you know, they have 4 years of him on contract still.
Yeah. And and that's the other thing. I think, you know, even when Al Jefferson and Paul Millsap were there, I always thought that combination of, like, they had all these different people. They had Canner, they had Favors, they had Jefferson, and they had Millsap. And it seemed like none of those combinations of guys really worked. I think Favors and Gobert works. You know, I think that one works better than any of the other ones that they had. The other ones, they were always kind of running into each other in the front court, whereas this one, it actually kind of works out best, you know. And all those other players wound up going somewhere where they were kind of happier. So it all worked out at the end for them. So we'll see with that. That's finishing up this category here, but we still have our ranking to do. And so we're going to be going from 19, 18, 17, and 16. So we got to get up to number 16 here. But let's go to the bottom of it. Adam, who is your... I'll let you go first, and I'll then do mine. Who is your 20th team? Who's your number 20 team here? The last team on this long shot category. Like, the worst team in there.
Well... I know you're going to want me to say the Kings.
Well, no, you say whatever you want.
Suns?
Phoenix Suns?
Yeah.
Okay. I would probably say... I'd probably agree. I'd probably say the Phoenix Suns. I think the Suns are the team that I would be the most surprised if they made the playoffs, is what I'm going to say. Number 19, I'll go. I'd say Sacramento. What would you say?
I would say Sacramento as well.
You would go 19, Sacramento. Okay. So we're on page there. Who you got at 18?
All right, I got Utah and...
You got the Jazz?
No, I'm trying to know who's left.
Oh, you're trying to look at it. Okay.
Utah... Dallas.
And the Pacers.
Yeah, Dallas.
You like you say the Mavericks at...
Yeah.
I could almost move them down in some ways.
Yeah, I would like to, but I'm trying to respect your Kings. Shouldn't be here.
I'll say the Jazz. I'll say the Jazz at 18.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. I'll say the Jazz. I'll go next. Number 17, I would probably say the Mavericks.
I will say the Pacers. I don't have the Jazz up top.
You'll say that. Okay. I like the Pacers the most because of Paul George. I think Paul George can carry a team.
Paul George can carry a team, but that team is awfully small and awfully thin and awfully...
I really do think Cousins is the better player overall, but I think Paul George has the leadership skills to carry that team again. I don't know if they'll be at the level that they were 2 years ago when they were having one of the best records in the Eastern Conference.
Well, they're the most realistic to make the playoffs. If I said, oh, they're in, oh, nobody's sort of surprised by
that. Yeah. But it's funny because I like the Jazz more than you do, but you have the Jazz ranked higher. Because I also figure in the Western Conference. Like, where realistically, like, do I think they will have a better record than Dallas Mavericks? I'd say probably not. Like, because Mark Cuban's always trying to make a move. They always do something that tries to kind of push him into that kind of like teaser spot to try to make the playoffs. But I don't think – here's my problem with the Mavericks. I don't think they can make the playoffs this year.
Really, the Mavericks have no assets to make the playoffs. There's nobody
– But all these all these teams are one move away from either being really good, like we talked about, or they're one move away from going really downhill.
Yeah, that's what happened to Portland this day.
Because, like, the next team we're going – like, the next category we move up on, like, that team is actually probably closer to going to the playoffs than they are farther from, like, going – back to the cellar. Like, I don't think that the teams that we're going to be talking about next are going to be like one move away from being bad. I think they're one move away from being very good.
These teams are teams we're not going to see in the same tier next year. They either moved up from a previous one or down from.
Whereas the ones next and then the one after that, like, they could be, those could be the exact same teams.
Yes.
Exactly. It's a little more stagnant. I mean, let's be honest. The NBA hierarchy is stagnant. Which teams are good? The same ones as before, pretty much.
Yeah, why? Because, well, you locked them up for 5 years. Well, you're going to be good for 5 years, barring some, you know.
And the ownership is determined to have good teams. And, you know, and the problem for Mark Cuban is that he always wants a good team, but I think he really put himself in a hole after DeAndre Gate. So we'll see what happens. Bold prediction. Give me one out of these groups.
Sacramento slips into the number 8.
Rudy Gobert makes the All-Star team.
That's not bold, but Indiana's not going to make the playoffs. Or Indiana makes a huge trade.
I think Indiana, you know what? That's a good one. I think that's going to be, I agree with you there.
They go big or they go home.
I agree with you. I think Indiana goes for it. I think they try to get it an unhappy player, an unhappy star.
Just that Monta Ellison just doesn't.
Are any of these coaches in trouble between Frank Vogel, Jeff Hornacek, and Carl Snyder and Carlisle?
Maybe Hornacek?
I think Vogel might be in trouble if they don't like the pace of play.
I don't know. I think he's only in the hot seat if he, you know, doesn't listen to Larry, whatever his crazy scheme is. But I think Hornacek, because ownership has and management has shown they're just going to make weird moves for the sake of weird moves. You know, we're all in. Nope, we're all out. No, we're going left. No, we're going right. So I think they might just go, well, we tried with you, but you're not doing it with these players. Well, these are half the players I didn't have last year.
Yeah.
You blew up my team. You blew up my overachieving team.
Yeah, but the coach can't go out there and just call out the owner. We saw that already with a couple of other coaches, and look where it got them. It got them on the chopping block. So, you know, you guys got to take it with a grin and just keep on moving. So
I'm on the George Karl bandwagon early. He's been proven with head cases. And
look at Denver ever since he left.
Exactly.
I think that's a good point. You know, so
that's the only selling point I can make for them.
But that's going to be wrapping up this episode of the NBA Team Podcast, the long shots on PlaceToBeNation.com. Everybody, thank you for listening here. We're going to be back with some more because obviously we still got, you know, 15 more teams. We're at the midway point, Adam.
We are at the midway point. We got through a lot of bad teams. Now we're going to get through the teams you expect to be there. And
I don't think we're done with the bad teams yet.
Well, we can stop saying, you know, reclamation project and
rebuild
tanking and draft picks and, you know, thankfully that talk's over. Now we're looking up for a change.
Things are looking up, and I hope everybody else is looking up as we go forward. So on behalf of Adam Murray, this is...